For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
We've been in the book of Romans for a while now. Lately, we've been camped out in chapter 13 talking about love relationships, loving one another. And up until now, the past couple of weeks, we've had to cover some pretty foundational concerns, some pretty important concerns, just to get us all on the same page. But it's been a little bit abstract. And so tonight, we're hoping to remedy that abstraction. We're hoping to really put some concrete steps before you so that you can come out of here knowing, here's some things I can do to put these into practice with the people God has placed in my life, these things we've been learning about love. But I know that some of us are going to need more than one night's worth of instruction on this, so I wanted to point you to a resource. I've got a video to show here that if you need some more help with this, this is a place that some of you may find helpful to turn.
Rodney and I have been acquaintances for about 2 months now.
Zach is a really cool guy. He knows so much about local issues, horticulture, and appetizers.
I love calamari.
And none of it would have happened without friend buddies.
Friend buddies.
Hello, I'm Esteban Villanueva III, founder and CEO of FriendBuddies.net. You know, finding your soulmate can be difficult, but finding someone to hang with can be even more difficulter. Friend Buddies was created to help the dozens of people who lack the ability to make acquaintances on their own, like a normal person would. Using our patent-pending PAL program, we'll find you a personal acquaintance for life. We'll set up a meeting place for you and your potential acquaintance. One of our certified field technicians will be there to aid you through the process. Our PAL program consists of 3 steps: greeting, establishing, and maintaining.
Step 1, greeting. Step 2, establishing. Step 3, maintaining.
Before Friend Buddies, I knew other people, but no one I would ever really call an acquaintance. I had no one to talk to about things like gas prices, trans fat, potholes, Arabian horses, drainage concerns. Does anyone want to talk about drainage? It got to the point where I was thinking about taking a dog and living on a mountain.
So what are you waiting for? Don't just sit there like an idiot. Find your acquaintance of a lifetime.
Thanks, Friend Buddies!
Let's go again.
Oh, go long!
For more information on FriendBuddies.net, please visit FriendBuddies.net.
So that's one option. If you're struggling relationally, tonight we hope to get into a lot more detail than this video got into there. And you know, it's funny because, I mean, it's making fun of dating sites, but it's also making fun of how shallow our relationships are. I mean, I love calamari too, but I hope that in our relationships we're talking about more than gas prices and drainage concerns. And I hope that we're actually building friendships where we can talk about something real. And I think the truth is, a lot of us have no idea where to even begin. I think we want relationships, we're kind of waiting for something to click, and yet we're protecting ourselves more and more, we're sealing ourselves off to keep from getting hurt. So as a result, we're incredibly lonely. And we feel kind of hopeless, like, almost a fatalism, like this is just the way that I am, and I can't really hope for anything better. And so, you know, when we read in the book of Romans, chapter 13, verse 8, the Apostle Paul says, "Let no debt remain outstanding except the continuing debt to love one another. For he who has loved his fellow, for he who loves his fellow man has fulfilled the law." We see a pretty substantial amount of theology here. That really, whatever God wants from us, whatever God wants us to do, it can really be summarized by this single command to love. Christ said to love God and to love other people are the two most important commandments. And that, you know, really the thing that we really have is a continual debt, an outstanding debt to one another, to love one another. A debt that we can really never pay off simply because Christ has loved us so much that the rest of our lives, any love we give to other people is such a small fraction of the love he's shown for us. And we've seen a couple of things. We saw a couple of weeks ago that love starts with God. That human beings, originally we were designed to be people that showed love in perfect relationships, and yet when we rebelled against God, when we cut ourselves off from God, we also cut ourselves off from love. And so we wander through life stumbling from relationship to relationship, unable to find true love, unable to really love other people. And I'm not just talking romantic love, I'm talking friendships. True love relationships with just a friend. We also saw that biblical love, we got a definition for love. Biblical love is a commitment to give of myself in every area for the good of another. And so there's some pretty important ideas in this definition. First of all, it's a commitment to give. This is not something I just feel, something that just happens, but it's something I decide to do. And it's I'm deciding to give of myself. And so it's not a commitment to take from other people or to trying to find a reciprocal, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours kind of relationship. It's just a decision to give to people. Biblical love is just giving love. And it's I'm giving of myself in every area for the good of another. And we saw many different areas that this applies to. For one, you know, we saw that biblical love is sacrificial. And so, you know, it's not always sacrificial. Sometimes it's really not much of a sacrifice to love someone, to do what's in their best interest. But oftentimes it is. And we'll find that if we want to get into biblical love, we'll find ourselves foregoing some of our own needs, our own interests, choosing to allow those to go unmet or allowing God to meet those needs in order to meet other people's needs. We also saw that it's a righteous love in the sense that it's able to discern right from wrong and it wants what's right for the other person. You know, this is the tough love aspect of love. And, you know, some of us, we grew up in households where we were never told no, and at least not in a loving way, and we've never seen disciplining love, righteous love practice, to where, you know, there's sometimes in a relationship where we need to say, I love you, but no, you've got to stop doing that. You're harming yourself and you're harming other people. And so we saw that this is an aspect of love. It wants what's best for the other person, even if maybe they don't appreciate it too much in the moment. They will appreciate it and respect you for it later. We've got to learn to do this. There's also a forgiving element to love. To biblical love. This is another way we can give to people. We can give people forgiveness. You know, the world says you wall yourself off and you don't ever let that happen again. And biblical love says, no, actually, I'm going to open myself back up to a relationship here. You know, maybe there's a trust that needs to be rebuilt, but, you know, I'm going to allow myself to get hurt again and again and again. And, you know, that's the way God loves us. God didn't say, you know, it's enough sin, I'm going to close myself off to you. He continually opened himself up to us, continually initiated with us. And so forgiveness is an important component of love that if we can't forgive, we're never going to make it in our relationships. And there's an emotional component to love. Another one that some of us have no problem with expressing our emotions in a relationship. Others of us have a real difficult time. And you know, if we're emotional creatures, God has created us as emotional beings. And there's a certain emotional component that needs to be present in our relationships. A controlled expressing our emotions and a concern for the other person's emotions that we'll talk about here later in the study. And so biblical love, we're giving of ourselves in all of these areas, and there's probably many more we could put up here, but this is just kind of a general sampling to get at some orientation here. And ultimately, with all of this, we're initiating these things. You know, some of us, I think, have this romantic Hollywood view of relationships. That says, you know, you just meet someone and the sparks fly and you're just in love. Or with a relationship, you just meet someone and you click and you're just best friends for life. And, you know, the biblical picture of love is not that way. You know, it's easy to reciprocate with these things when there's no risk. You know, the person has already given out, so you're really just kind of giving back. But when you actually step up to the plate to give out, when you haven't received any of these things in return, to initiate sacrificially for someone, to initiate emotionally, to forgive someone. You know, this can be pretty scary. And if we're sitting around waiting for relationships to click, what you're really doing is you're sitting around waiting for someone who's mature enough to initiate love. And you'll find that if you learn to initiate love, then you can probably click with most people. If you practice some of these principles we're going to talk about here. And so, before we get into some of the specifics, we should just talk a little bit about why we would want to build love relationships. Maybe we're convinced that loving is important and good, but why would I, build a love relationship with a particular person? Why not just love this person and that person and do random acts of kindness and, water someone's plants while they're out of town? That's all love. That's all giving to the other person. Why are we building a relationship? I want to give you a couple of reasons for this. For one, this is deeply biblical. You look at the life of Jesus Christ, the time he spent here on earth. What did he spend that time doing? Sure, he was traveling around the Palestine, the Judean countryside, Samaria. He was traveling around in Galilee, preaching and helping people, healing people. But the whole time, this was done with a group of people that followed him from place to place. He had a group of men and women that would follow him around and were with him for some, and in some cases, it looks like almost all of his ministry. He was building relationships with them. When he got to the end of his life, what was he doing on the last night of his life? Was he out preaching, trying to get one final sermon in, trying to rally more support for himself? No, he was withdrawn. He was with his friends. He was sharing with them some final things, sharing his heart, pouring his heart out to them, trying to prepare them for his death, for when they were going to be without him. You look at the Apostle Paul, too, and you just look in letter after letter that he writes, I don't think there's a single letter where he's not talking about his relationship with this person. And this person says hi, and hey, I can't wait to come see you. And I remember the tears that you shed when we were last together. And it's hard to separate his relationships from the other things that he wants to say in the letter. He's just constantly weaving them in. Traveling around from city to city, not by himself, but with a team of people. You look at Jesus Christ, you look at the Apostle Paul, you look at the examples we see in the New Testament and the Old Testament, New Testament more than the Old. And these guys, these men and women, they're building relationships. They're loving people in very specific, sustained, long-term ways. It's also extremely fulfilling. The opposite of this would be a life of empty loneliness. If you remember, we saw that we are designed for relationships. And so when we live a life in relationships, God exists in relationship with the Son, with the Holy Spirit, with the Father. All three are in relationship with one another and have been since the beginning of time. And so when we live in relationships, we're living according to the way we were designed. We're not fighting the way we were made, but we're getting in line with it. And I know in my life, when I'm feeling discouraged about what's happening in my life, when I feel like I'm not accomplishing anything, I just think back to my relationships. I think back to the friendships that God has enabled me to build over the last 10 or 11 years. And I realize, that's just not true. Something real is happening here. There's something fulfilling here. And no matter what today was like or tomorrow is going to be like or what last month was like, there's these relationships that I can point to. And, these are the things that I can think of when times are hard and the people I can run to when times are hard. Sometimes it's just like there's this storm and that's the only safe port. It's your friends, your relationships. And so if you've never built relationships, you may not know what I'm talking about, but if you've gotten into this, you're probably nodding your head and saying, that is definitely right. My relationships are so fulfilling. And I don't know what my life would look like if it weren't for my relationships. There's no better preparation for marriage. I know many of us here want to get married. A few of us are married, but most of us aren't. And most of us that aren't want to be married. And there's no better preparation for marriage than learning to build relationships with members of the same sex. Learning to give love in a sustained and ongoing way before you get into marriage is the best possible thing you can do. It's pretty scary when you watch two people that have never built a relationship, have never learned to love sacrificially, decide to get married, okay? That's pretty freaking scary. It's like you're standing on top of a cliff and watching two trains on the same track just going about 60 miles an hour toward one another. Because you can see, maybe they will, being thrown into a situation like marriage, the hardest relationship you could ever build, by the way. There's no relationship more difficult than marriage. This is It's even really good marriages, there are times of prolonged agony, times of incredible pain. I mean, you think about it. I mean, you're basically trying to, for the rest of your life, befriend someone of the opposite sex who thinks completely different than you, whose feelings are probably wired much differently. You know, it's pretty challenging. I mean, you know, guys, if spending a whole day playing video games and watching football with your wife is not going to make her feel close to you. Okay, you need to learn to detect what makes the other person feel loved, what makes the other person, you know, feel built up, and then do that. And the best way to learn that is in a marriage. And when you see two people, like I was saying, trying to marry one another when they've never learned to do this, I think it's a recipe for disaster. Maybe a sink or swim kind of situation. You know, I don't know how to swim, but I'm going to have a chopper drop me in the ocean 5 miles from shore and just hope to God that I don't drown in the process. You know, I might make it in, but I'm going to swallow a lot of water. I'm going to be exhausted. I'm going to be near death probably on several instances in that situation. And that's what marriage is like if you have not learned to build relationships. And, you know, what might be the only thing that might be scarier than two people that have never built relationships trying to marry each other is when you get a person who's never done this marrying a person who has. And you just look at the person who has and you're like, what are you thinking? I mean, you're violating every principle of wisdom. You are a first-rate fool for trying to get into this marriage with this person who, yeah, maybe acts spiritual when they're around you, maybe is giving when they're around you, but why haven't they been able to do it with anybody else in their life? Is it because you're special? Is it because you're just, you know, we just have a special bond? No, it's not. And as soon as you get married, shortly thereafter, if it doesn't happen before you're married, the person is just going to start treating you like every other relationship they've ever had. They're going to be incredibly selfish. And I don't know if these people are thinking that sex is going to, like, overcome our inability to get along. But I can tell you, if you're not getting along, that sex is going to end pretty quick. You get about 3 weeks, and then getting along becomes a prerequisite for sex, okay? So, you know, I think all of us here, all of us who are not married should commit now that before I get married, I am going to make certain that I know how to build relationships and that the spouse that I pick, I'm not just going to pick someone because they're good looking or, you know, we like the same music. I'm going to look for somebody that also knows how to build relationships, you know, and not that they would tell you that, but their friends would tell you that. I mean, ideally, it's a case where other people are saying, I don't know where I'd be without this person. This person has loved me so much. My life has been changed because of the relationship that this person has initiated with me. I mean, that would be the premium kind of situation you'd be looking for in marriage. Building love relationships. It really, there's no better preparation for marriage than that. Additionally, certain aspects of love can only be practiced in deep relationships. You know, there are aspects of love that you've got to wade pretty deep into the pool in order to even start practicing. And you think about forgiveness. It's pretty easy to forgive somebody when you keep them distant, when you keep them at arm's length. They can't really hurt you anyway. But it's when you let somebody in, when you put down the outer walls and the inner walls and then the inner walls, and you allow them into your life. When they hurt you there, that hurts a lot worse. And that's when you really got to think, am I going to forgive this person? This incredible pain. This is not just kind of some sort of surface glancing blow that somebody I don't know could inflict on me. This is a deep wound. And am I going to choose to forgive? And the only way to forgive somebody in that situation is to be driven back to Christ and to think about how Christ has forgiven me. And the other effect it'll have is the other person will see, man, this person knows me completely and entirely. And I've hurt them many times, and yet they accept me. They love me. And they start to get a little glimpse of God's love when we begin to practice that sort of love. And so if you want to exercise the higher, more complicated, more powerful love skills, you're going to have to get into deep relationships to do that. And finally, spiritual growth happens, I think, best in the context of personal relationships. You know, we can try and grow on our own, we can try and be better people, whatever. You know, relationships really find out our true sin patterns. They really find out where we're really screwed up. And it gives us the motivation to change. You know, a lot of us, you know, one thing that can go undetected for a while is this independent, autonomous streak. And, you know, that one's really hard to pin down until you get into relationships, until you start to see that come out on other people. And it's one thing to say, yeah, I should probably be more vulnerable. I should probably not be so aloof from people. But it's another thing when there's somebody that you love, that you care about, and they're sitting there weeping because of how distant they feel from you. And you know, you've rejected all their best efforts to get into your life, and they're crying because they can't get in, and they feel hopeless that you're ever going to let them in. And they're maybe even thinking about giving up on the relationship. You know, it's one thing to say, yeah, I should be less, I need to get a handle on my anger. I'm probably too controlling and critical. But it's another thing to see the people you love live in a constant state of feeling like they're just not good enough. Like you're constantly, like they are a disappointment is how you're making people feel. And again, they're starting to withdraw. They're starting to give up on the relationship. And it's in that kind of situation, I know for me, that's when it really has sunk home. When I've affected the people I love the most. And there's certain things in my life that I think would still be there had not friends in my life loved me and allowed me into a deep level and then share with me how they were affected by me. Not for their good, not because they were sick of me doing this, that, or the other thing, just because they were concerned for me. So spiritual growth, if you want to get into real spiritual growth, you got to get into deep relationships, deep love relationships. And we want to talk about how to do that. Okay, so we're going to present a model here for relationships. You know, this is not the only way to think about relationships, but I think it's a helpful one. And what we're going to think about this in terms of different areas of investment. And we're going to talk about what love looks like in each of those areas. One area, one circle that we're investing in our relationships is common experience. You know, we spend time with people we care about. And there's just no substitute for spending time with people. All of the talking in the world, you know, it just can't make up for somebody that you've known for years and you've spent time with, regular time with. You've done stuff together. You got shared memories together, trips you've taken, experiences you've had, etc. You got to have some common experience with people. That's just the way we work as humans. Two, we're investing in the area of our personal inner working. So this is where we share and talk about what's going on the inside. You know, what are my thoughts? What are my fears, my hopes, my dreams? You know, areas of our personality, quirks that we have, things that we think. You know, this is really kind of investing and relating when it comes to our thoughts and our choices, our will. And the third area we'll talk about is the area of emotional sharing. Because we can spend time together, we can talk about things we're thinking, and yet if there's not an emotional component to this relationship, it's going to feel real weird and distant. And a good relationship's got to have all these. You know, for example, if you just had a relationship that you had common experience but not any kind of personal inner working sharing, no emotional sharing, I mean, this might look like some of our family relationships where we spend a lot of time with these people, but we never talk about anything real. We just kind of were together. We watched TV together. We might have, I know I had tons of friends like this before I started walking with God. And so, you know, we've got to develop all of these. And the way we're going to talk about developing these is different levels of relationship. And the terms we've picked are casual, close, intimate, in order from least deep to deepest. Okay, and you know, these categories are kind of arbitrarily picked. There's not a hard and fast line between close and intimate. It's not like, you know, you share one more thing and all of a sudden balloons drop and you're suddenly an intimate relationship. These are rough categories. There's probably relationships that are less than casual. You know, you think about the acquaintance or the very bottom of all relationship depth would be the Facebook friend. But we're going to talk about these three levels of relationships, and we'll kind of define them as we go. But don't get too hung up on exactly, precisely, you know, am I a close or a casual? And is this common experience or is this personal inner working? This is just kind of to give you a framework for thinking about your relationships. And obviously, you know, the emotional sharing and a casual acquaintance level of friendship is going to be a lot different than the level of sharing in an intimate relationship. Same thing with common experience. You're going to spend a lot more time with your intimate friends and a lot less time with just, you know, a close friend or a casual friend. So we'll explore these row by row. What does a casual relationship look like, a close relationship, and an intimate relationship? First of all, the casual relationship. In the common experience, you know, these relationships, they're going to have sporadic contact. They tend to be short-term, somewhat superficial. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, most of our relationships are going to fall into this category. There just simply isn't enough time, enough emotional energy to build deep, intimate relationships with every single person we know. I mean, we probably all know 50, 60, 100 people, maybe even more than that. And we just can't know all of them in a deep way. And so with a casual relationship, it's going to be kind of sporadic. You know, we need to initiate time spent. My font is messed up, but whatever. We need to initiate time spent with, you know, so it's with a casual relationship, some of us might get comfortable just, you know, we maybe have a few closer friends, and we get pretty comfortable in those relationships. And so in order to have casual relationships, we will need to initiate some time with people that we just kind of know. You know, I think a home church environment is great for this. So you might say, hey, you know, what are you doing this weekend? Do you want to watch the game together? Hey, you're going to play paintball. Can I come along? That sort of thing. So we're initiating to spend at least some, we got to spend at least some time with people in order to build even a casual relationship. So there's got to be some time together, and you're probably going to have to initiate that. Usually people in general are not very initiative. It takes a great deal of spiritual maturity to be initiative. When it comes to the inner working, what we've got here is kind of a general searching, a general probing into the other person's interests, goals, likes, dislikes, problems, background, spiritual interests, etc. And so here, we're just kind of asking general questions about the person. This is going to require getting outside yourself to explore someone else. You know, I bet there's people here in this room that have never asked another person a question in a relationship. It's never even crossed your mind. If you have asked a question, it's only because there's a story you want to tell. Have you ever broken a bone? Well, one time I was, you know, skiing and, you know, fill in the monologue there. And that's really what a lot of our conversations look like. You may have witnessed this last week, spending a lot more time together. But it's just a series of loud, competing monologues. This person talking about this, and this person talking about that, and this person jumping in with a story about this, and this person quoting a movie line. And, you know, sometimes it's like word association. I mean, there's no relationship between this person, what this person said, and what this person said, except there's like one common word that serves as the transition to a completely different train of thought. It's kind of funny just to sit back and observe one of these word association monologue conversations. I mean, it's like, are you even listening to what the other person is saying, or are you just looking for a word that you have a story about? We're going to have to get outside ourselves. We're going to have to explore another person. What you might find is that other people are kind of interesting if you take the time to ask them questions about their lives. I've never met a person that, without even a little bit, pretty minimal effort of asking them questions, I've never met somebody that didn't turn out to be at least kind of interesting. And the more I got to know them, the more interesting they became. People are fascinating if you'll take the time to ask them questions. If you watch somebody that is mature, just follow them around the room one night. And what you'll see is they'll come up to a conversation that's like completely superficial. They're like quoting Star Wars to each other. And, you know, they'll start asking questions. And before you know it, that's become a pretty interesting conversation. And this person, you know, the people they joined up with don't even realize what happened. You know, it's just kind of like, wow, this is cool. And they don't realize this other person is just sitting there asking questions. And, you know, they're not like asking questions because they want to talk. It's just like, well, you know, that's just what they do. They enjoy it. And they become quite skilled at it with practice. Why don't you try this? I mean, try asking someone else about, you know, what's your family background? What do you like to do for fun? What's your favorite class that you're taking right now? You know, tell me about where you went to high school and what that was like. You know, just really simple questions. Tell me about, and then just insert a noun. And you'd be surprised how much mileage you can get out of that. And then ask a follow-up question. You know, don't just zone out. You got to listen, and then you'll find more questions will come if you're actively taking an interest. Oh, really? Tell me more. What do you mean by that? Things like that. It's really a pretty small toolbox of questions that you need in order to get some really good conversations and relationships going. With emotional sharing, at this level, there is some emotion that needs to be expressed. There needs to be interest. You know, this is it's kind of an emotional thing where you're like, really? You know, a lot of times you're kind of leaning forward. Maybe your eyes are a little bit wider, open. You're nodding your head at various times. Warmth, smiling on occasion, enthusiasm. Really? Wow. Just say wow. And it usually fits. Not always. So you're expressing warmth. You know, you need to learn to be more expressive and vulnerable. You know, I know that, I mean, I used to have a real problem with this. You know, I remember in high school, people would come up to me and they're like, dude, you are so arrogant. And I'd be like, what are you talking about? I'm like the most insecure person in this room. And it was because I was just real insecure. So I would just withdraw from people and just kind of hang back. And, you know, I'm also the kind of person that I'll just kind of focus in on something and I'll get this scowl. Even when I'm not angry, I kind of look angry. And so people were thinking I was either arrogant or just pissed off all the time. And I didn't realize I need to, just because I'm feeling one way, you know, just because I feel, wow, I like talking to you, the other person may not be getting that message. And we need to find simple ways to communicate that to the other person if we want to build casual relationships. Some of us, this might be our problem. People think we just don't care when we really do. They're not getting the message. And so these kinds of emotions, it avoids something that we call various places pigtail pulling. You know, this is the immature form where I don't know how to engage emotionally, but I want to. And so, you know, you think about the 8-year-old that runs up on the playground and yanks on the girl's pigtail and then takes off running, and she's like, "Oh, you!" And it's kind of an emotional interaction. I mean, it's better than nothing. It's better than having the girls totally ignore me. And some of us are still doing this. It's maybe not actually yanking on the hair, but it's, you know, the play fighting that we do. It's the sarcasm can be a big one where you just cut somebody down because you're trying to connect with them. And for some reason you think that this is the best way to connect with them. Insult them in a public and mean way. And I used to have relationships, and that was all we used to do. And I remember coming around to, a home church here, and I did it once, and everybody was just like, I just got this look, like, where the hell did that come from? And I was like, things are different here. This is not how they do it here. They don't just insult one another and call that friendship. They encourage one another. They say nice things to each other. So we're avoiding this really immature emotional relating. There's a sensitivity here, okay? And sensitivity really asks the question, what is appropriate in this conversation? If we're sharing negatives, at this level, we're really not sharing negatives too often. I remember having a problem with this too. People come up to me and they'd be like, how you doing? Okay? And I thought they really wanted to know, how are you doing? I don't understand that this is like a greeting ritual that we have where you say, okay, fine, or you share something happy. And so I would stand there just kind of scratching my head, trying to think about, that's a good question, how am I doing? And I just get these really awkward interactions. It took me a while to figure this out. I did not pick up on a lot of these things naturally. And so our negatives, we're not sharing, we're not just vomiting all over people, we're not sharing all the negative things in our life. You know, there's certain things that just aren't appropriate at this level. You know, for example, if you had like a medical operation on a body part that you cover with clothes, that's not appropriate for sharing with someone you just met, okay? That's probably not appropriate for sharing with most people. But we've got to kind of be able to get this skill to assess a situation and to determine that's not appropriate here. You know, there are certain, you know, aspects of our sin, aspects of how we're failing. You know, even if we're going through really painful circumstances, we just can't open up on people under most circumstances if it's just a casual relationship. It can crush the relationship. I remember I used to, when I first started walking with God, I had this thing, I didn't realize I was doing it, where I would get into these like super emotional conversations with women, and I would get them to share all these incredibly personal details from their life, like really negative, painful things from their past. It was really, really pretty messed up because, you know, I'd go away from them after this 2-3 hour conversation, and I'd be like, I don't know how to interact with this person now. And so I would just avoid them for like a month. And then I'd try and have another interaction with them. And it was just, you know, I didn't realize how much I was using them, at least not consciously and fully. And I realized that needs to change. I need to learn, you know, I can have these kind of conversations maybe eventually with somebody, but not on the first meeting, not in a 4-hour conversation when I first met somebody. So those are casual relationships. And you know, if you only practice these, you would be surprised. I think you'd be shocked at how quickly you can get some relationships going. Even with, you know, if you did this pretty diligently for a month or so, you know, probing into people's lives, asking them questions, the next time you see them, asking them more questions about the same thing, you'd be surprised at how quickly you can start to feel close to people. To where maybe in some cases you can actually feel closer to somebody than you ever have after doing this for just a month. So if you only did this, this would be good, okay? This would be better. This would be an improvement for many of us. And yet if we only did this, if we stopped here, we would never make it on to the deeper ends of the pool. We'd be standing down in the 3-foot section, and there's this whole ocean out there that we can explore, and we're not going down into there. And so we need to move on and learn to build close relationships. Close relationships. You can't skip the casual step, but hopefully at least a few of those casual relationships are starting to become close relationships over time. If you really just keep repeating the things we saw in that first slide, the relationships will deepen. But as they deepen, you'll notice they start to take on some different characteristics. With a close relationship, you're spending regular time. And this is going to include quality time. You know, you're going to have at least some shared goals and interests with your close friends. To where, you know, you don't have to take on every single one of their interests, but at least, you know, there's some things that you like to do together. And, you know, a lot of us, one of our main shared goal and interest is serving God together. This becomes an incredible point of unity in our relationship. And you see this all over the pages of Scripture, you know. You see Paul and Timothy's relationship. Just read over those books sometime, 1 and 2 Timothy, and look at how Paul talks about Timothy. It's like, you can't separate his relationship from the service that they both were doing for God. But with this regular time spent, you know, there is no shortcut to intimacy. You can't expect to put in a couple of hours, you know, every couple of months of focused time and expect to build a close relationship with somebody. This takes time. This is just the way we work as human beings. Time for the relationship to just kind of sink down in, for us to slowly become part of one another's lives. And this is something we need to make time for. You know, I don't know how many times I've seen this occur where somebody will be like, you know, they'll have initiated a friendship with somebody, they'll be getting closer. Maybe this is the first time they've ever done this. And then you'll ask them, hey, how's that friendship with so-and-so going? And they'll be like, oh yeah, I haven't really talked to him in several weeks. It's like, what do you mean? It seemed like things were going well. I'm like, well, you know, our schedules just didn't line up. Okay. If you want a friendship with someone, you can't sit around waiting for your schedules to line up because your schedules are not going to line up. We're actually, because we're trying to build a relationship with this person, we're actually arranging certain things in our lives that are getting in the way of the relationship. We're making effort to sync our schedules up so that we can get coffee every week at a particular time. If you wait for these things to happen, you'll find yourself continually frustrated by how you'll get a little bit of momentum and then you'll lose what gains you made. And, you know, we're initiating real sharing, real spiritual involvement. This is what quality time means. It means we're not just sitting around BSing all the time. There's some of that, but we also need to initiate reality with people. Asking them about, you know, how if the person is a Christian, how are things going spiritually for you? How is this particular thing going in your life? You know, we're trying to create an environment that's just not we're watching movies together, but we're actually trying to have quality relational time with one another. We start to feel the freedom to ask more pointed personal questions other relationships, your feelings. You know, whereas before they might have just shared an incident and you'd have been like, cool. Now you might say, wow, how'd that make you feel? Or, boy, what was going through your mind when that was happening? Or how does that match up with what the person said over here? So you're starting to connect some more of the dots. You're starting to probe a little bit deeper into that mind of theirs and trying to find out what makes them tick. And not with your close friends, not only do you start to develop a knowledge of, you know, this is what they like to do, this is what they are studying, you know, this is their basic family situation. You know, you kind of know things about someone. You also start to know, what are they scared of? What is the thing that they're most excited about? You know, when they're not doing well spiritually, how does that come out in their actions? You start to notice these things. And, you know, it's kind of cool when you know somebody in that way. They're not always getting to know you back in the same way at this level. This can still be kind of more of a one-directional relationship. We start to understand each other's problems and potentials. We see where this person commonly falters. And we start to see, wow, this person, they're pretty smart. Or this person's pretty hilarious. I never even realized this before. This person, man, they seem to really be compassionate in a way that I know that I'm not. And so we start to notice these things in people. And, you know, this really involves thinking about them while we're not with them. You know, people can tell when you're just shooting from the hip in relationships. And you can get away with that a little bit, but eventually that's going to catch up with you. You know, this is, instead of, you know, with your downtime, when you're driving somewhere, when you're walking around the grocery store, when you're going for a run, you're not just thinking about yourself. What I need to do, this, this, and this, what I want to think about, but you're thinking about this other person. You're thinking about the conversation you had the other day. You're wondering what would make this person feel encouraged. You know, you begin to try and promote their potential. You try and help them with their problems, and you're praying. You're asking God how you can help this person. You're not just settling for, wow, they could be pretty good at that, but you're thinking, how can I help them succeed? That is a great question we can ask in our relationships. How can I help them succeed? Whether that's promoting the positive things about them or helping them grow past the areas they just continually slip up in. When it comes to emotional sharing, we get into some more vulnerable, some deeper emotions here. This is loyalty, affection, gratitude. I think of loyalty as an emotional expression of commitment. You know, this is where you're like, you know, I'm here for you. And the person feels like you've got their back. Gratitude, this is not just like, hey, thanks for the ride, but this is like, I really appreciate our friendship for this reason. And then you fill in the blank there. I don't say that enough in my relationships, even though I think it a whole lot more than I say it. You know, it may take some time, some investment to actually begin to feel these sorts of things. You may need to think a little while about what you appreciate about that person. You know, I recently celebrated a wedding anniversary, my fifth anniversary of my marriage. And, you know, for the couple weeks leading up to that, I was putting together this slideshow with pictures from, you know, the first 5 years and then way beyond that of our marriage with some music and stuff. And, you know, I would just sit down and I'd start going through these pictures and I would just start realizing how lucky I am, how much I appreciate my wife, how blessed I feel by God. And, you know, by the time my anniversary came around, I just was like this emotional, you know, time bomb that was just waiting to go off in a good way. You know, I really appreciate this. And I was able to express things that I really felt these things, but I'm not sure I would have been able to express them if I hadn't taken that time to think through the relationship in a pretty deep way. Additionally, we're more honest about our disappointments, but we're also careful to encourage. You know, a lot of us just haven't realized the power of encouragement in our relationships. We're telling people what they should do. We're talking about next steps for a person, but we're not saying, I really believe in you. I think this part about you is awesome. I think you have so much potential in this area. And if we did even just a little bit more of that, you would see such an impact in your relationships. Most of us are too negative, but we're also not, we don't want to flatter either. We don't want to just kind of randomly say things that probably aren't true. You know, that can be pretty grotesque in and of itself because it feels like you're manipulating the person and you're not really genuinely thinking through the other person's strengths and how to encourage them. So that's kind of what a close relationship would look like. But there is one more level. The intimate relationship is one that, boy, it'd be hard to have more than a couple of these at any given time. You might have friends that kind of come into your life and back out of your life. But, you know, this is something where you'd have with like a spouse, a person you're engaged to, maybe. Maybe like a best friend, maybe two. But, you know, with an intimate relationship, this is like, this is about as deep as you can go as a human being with another human being. You know, in this situation, there's an extensive time commitment. The availability has few limits. You know, if this person needs me, I don't care what I'm doing. It's dropped. They're automatically first priority over anything else, almost anything else I could be doing. We're going to be spending lots of time together. That's partly why you can only have a couple of these at any given time. You might be seeing them every day, maybe for hours a day. You have shared worlds and goals and activities and people. And so this is not like, you know, I've got my sphere of friends and things that I do, and then this person has their sphere of friends, but it's like over time, those have kind of merged to a substantial degree. We're friends with a lot of the same people. I think it's weird when, like, marriages, you know, the husband has his group of friends and the wife has hers, and it's like they don't even like the other person's friends, and it's they don't even like doing the same things. You know, our worlds start to collide. And, you know, we love the other person, and we begin to love the things that they love. We begin to love the people that they love. And, you know, this is something that just kind of happens naturally in a relationship. You know, we've got a common prayer burden. We're praying about the same things. Oftentimes, we're serving God in the same community of people, and we're both, you know, like when my wife and I pray, you know, we pray for things going on in each of our lives, but a lot of what we pray for is the other people that we love, that we're friends with. And, you know, we both know what's going on, basically, with, you know, all the people that we know, and we're praying for them. Also, we're monitoring when we miss time together. You know, you might be like, boy, I haven't talked to that person in a couple of days, and I need to track them down. And the other person's doing the same thing. And so you're kind of keeping track. You kind of have like a little bookmark in your brain that just specially belongs to this person. And it's just important enough to you that, you know, I don't want to go several weeks without talking to this person. So, you know, when you don't see each other, it really bothers both of you, and you're both tracking each other down. Also, there's a backlog of common experience here. You've just done so many things together. The common experience that you have becomes a powerful force in the relationship. Other deficiencies that the relationship might have, it's okay, because I know we've been through so much together. You know, it's like there's this huge iceberg below the surface, and even if, you know, there's problems at the tip, I know that there's so much momentum beneath that. I've seen this other person, you know, when I've been like the biggest jerk in the world to them, they still have loved me and accepted me. We've been through conflict. We've been through some of the most incredible times in our lives together. And I know that, you know, we're really just kind of adding to that relationship. This is, you know, our whole relationship is not riding on this next interaction. When it comes to our inner working, this is basically, it's completely open communication. The only, you know, you would still kind of monitor some of the things that you share, things that would be real harmful to the other person. This is not stream of consciousness, but it's real open. I mean, it's hard to imagine really any limits to what you would share with a person in this kind of relationship. And there's a common commitment to develop each other's character. I'm not okay with this person staying the way they are, and they're not okay with me staying the way that I am. We both love each other, and we both know that we're in a unique position to help the other person grow. My wife and I joke about how, you know how the old coal miners, they would keep a canary down in the cave with them, and if the air supply got cut off, the canary has really small lungs, so the canary would die first, and they all would realize, oh crap, we got to get out of here. My wife and I joke about how she's kind of my canary, because if I'm doing bad, that like kills her long before it kills anyone else. It comes out on her. And, you know, she knows me better than anybody else, and she's able to sense that. And, you know, problems that, you know, might snowball for months before they actually come out to the surface, she's able to detect those early, and you know, we're able to help each other in that way. And this has got to be reciprocal. This has got to go both ways when it gets to an intimate relationship. Some of our relationships are probably stuck just because, you know, there's a weird hierarchy there. Either you have not allowed the other person to become your peer, or maybe you're kind of the lower person in the relationship and you have not chosen to realize this is an actual person that I could build a friendship with, and until I can, it's not until I stop thinking this relationship is all about me and them serving me that I'm going to break through to the next level with them. And, I've had friends come to me and say, you know, I don't even feel like this is a relationship. I feel like this is some sort of thing where you show up and take from me every single time. And, you know, it was because he was concerned about where I was at. And he wanted me to grow to the next level, and that involved, learning to take an interest in him. This has got to be both ways. Or we're doomed to we'll just hit a certain ceiling and we won't get any farther. Emotional sharing, this is basically the same as the close relationship, but there's even more freedom, okay? Again, it's really only emotions that would be, you know, real hurtful, harmful, selfish, attacking, that we would choose to hold back. It's giving and controlled, constructive. We're forsaking the right to just explode on the person. Just because they're close to us doesn't mean we have a right to just lay into them with whatever we're feeling at any given time. We usually really don't have a problem expressing our negative emotions. At least I don't. Usually the ones we have trouble expressing are the positive emotions. The gratitude emotions, the loyalty, the affection. Those are the ones that I have a hard time with. And it's a commitment to share nurturing feelings, even when they're not spontaneous. You know, there's some emotions that are just never going to be spontaneous. Some of us might never feel so moved that we're just like, I really love you. I'm so grateful to God for our relationship. We might have to plan out in advance. We might even have to plan the words that we say to the person. And some people think that this is fake or whatever. It's not fake because you really feel that way. And you're just trying to express it to the other person because they can't read your mind. And because the relationship needs it. It needs to go to this next level emotionally. And until you're willing to give emotionally in the relationship, until you're willing to share emotionally, you're going to be stuck at a casual or close level, and you're not going to experience how awesome it is to build an intimate relationship. Okay, so just a couple final thoughts on using this model. Building a relationship, that's a learned skill. There's nobody that comes into the world that's just naturally an amazing relational person. There might be certain parts that are easier, but we've all got a lot to learn in this area, no matter how easy certain parts of it might come to us. It's a skill you can learn, and so we should take courage from that. Because you might be sitting here feeling like, man, this sucks, I suck at this, and we might feel kind of fatalistic about it, but the reality is that you can learn to build a relationship. That's like saying, well, I'm just not a responsible person. Well, you can learn responsibility. It might be hard, it might take several years, but you can learn that. And building relationship is the same way. Successful relationships, I think, should be a prerequisite for marriage. You know, nobody's going to enforce this, except in the most extreme cases. Someone might refuse to marry you or something like that to do your wedding. I think this should be a personal goal that every single one of us here sets is, you know, I want to learn how to relate before I try and dive into the deepest, most difficult relationship I'm ever going to build for the rest of my life. And I don't want to get into that kind of a contract, a kind of commitment with someone else, unless they also have demonstrated real success when it comes to building relationships. I think you should try to build relationships at multiple levels of depth. If we only have a couple really close friendships, you might be fooling yourself. You might actually be codependent, unable to step out of this and to initiate new relationships with new people. And your relationships are going to get kind of stale. But we also, if all we've got is casual or sub-casual relationships, that's a problem too. And you should really try and, you know, maybe take stock of where are my relationships at, and are there a few that could maybe deepen here? Or maybe I've completely lost all casual relationships, and maybe I need to initiate that. Usually in college, usually as young people, we don't have that much trouble with the casual relationships. It's the deep relationships that some of us have never even come close to experiencing. You may need to get some help from other people on this. This is why this is done in communities. I guarantee you there's got to be somebody in the home church that you are a part of, or if you're not part of a house church, I really recommend checking one of those out, because each of these groups, they have usually several people that have learned how to build love relationships, and they can help you. They can give you some guidance. They can share their insights and what they've seen. They can point you to some resources. There's some books out at the book table there. There's a book called Spiritual Relationships That Last that I think we've got copies of. And there's also a book called Organic Disciple Making that's got a chapter on relationship building, maybe two chapters, that have got some real practical stuff. A lot of this comes from that Spiritual Relationships That Last book. And finally here, you need to rely on God's power. If you don't sit here and think, man, I could just never do that. That does not describe me at all. You're right that you could never do that. But the reality is that we have the power of God at our disposal. You know, I was so far from even a casual relationship when I first started walking with God. And praise God, by the grace of God, He has enabled me to build a rich relational life. Some amazing relationships, way better than I thought I would build. I mean, the kind of relationships I always wanted, but just never thought I could have. And if we are relying on the power of God, you know, you can't just implement these and expect it to work. You know, if you're trying to just meet other people's needs without God meeting your needs, you're just going to flip right back and become a needy person again, because you are a needy person. It's only God's power that gives you the courage to step out and to take the focus off looking at yourself all the time, to turn your eyes to another person and to think, how can I love them? So we need to rely on the power of God and never think that I'm too messed up for God to work in this area. This is God's will for your life. This is something God really wants to get behind if you're willing to allow Him in this area of your life. And finally, the great part about this is that once you learn to do this, you can do it again. You know, your initial attempts at this will probably be the hardest attempts. The skills, you know, a relationship with this person might look different from a relationship with that person, but a lot of the skills, there's kind of a core skill set that you can apply in different relationships. And, really, you could build relationship after relationship for the rest of your life and live a pretty happy and fulfilled life. And so there's a lot of hope here. God wants you to succeed in this area. The question is, are you willing to allow Him in and to do some work on your relationships? And that's what I got on relationships. The practical aspects. We're going to stay with this practical thread next week. Once you start building relationships, you might find that you start getting into some conflict. And conflict is one of the leading killers of our relationships. And I think we need some study in the area of conflict. In this church at Rome, they were having real problems getting along. And so we wanted to study, spend 2 weeks talking about how to resolve conflicts before we move on into this next section of Romans. Lord, I know that this is one of the best things we have to offer, a lonely, depressed, unhappy world. This is the kind of thing that can't be faked, can't be duplicated. Real, genuine, biblical love, Lord, comes from You and You alone. And I pray that we would be beacons of light, beacons of love, shining out to the people that we interact with. I pray that there's people here on this campus that are looking for answers, that are looking for something more, that You would guide them into our paths, and that we'd be willing to speak up and to share with them how Your love has transformed our lives. And I pray that our lives would be characterized by love relationships, and that we would leave behind us a trail of people that know that they've experienced the love of God through us and have the courage and the understanding and knowledge of God and initiate with that with other people. Amen.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.